What up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Unplugged Podcast. Today's guest technically is my boss when I'm at Knott's, but he has a long career in not only theme parks, but also live entertainment. And the reason why I asked him to join me on this podcast is because he had so many cool stories to tell, and he's such a nice guy. I asked if he could share some of the stories he shared with me about his career in entertainment and also in theme parks. My boss, my friend, and experienced entertainer.
Beyond Knott's, you also worked at Universal as well. It only that one show that you talked about?
I did the Conan show for a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Mostly just the rehearsal period. I think I only performed for like a day or two Universal. Yeah. They found out that I was working at Disney Monday through Fridays, and I was there at Universal on the weekends, and they said it was a conflict of interest.
Oh. So wow.
So yeah. So after like 2 or 3 days, I was like let go. So I was like, okay. Uh-oh. Oh well.
That's a shame.
And then they hired me back a few years later as Barney Rubble for Flintstones.
Yeah.
The first Flintstones. I was a special events Barney Rubble. Okay. And kind of on call as needed for the show. But I never really performed it. I just was there at the rehearsals.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was the early morning guy. I was there at the crack of dawn. So when KTLA or Channel 5 or Channel 7 or 9 or 11 or 2 or 4 or 13 or whatever, Telemundo or whoever would show up, they would have a set of Barney, Fred, Wilma, and Betty ready to go just to interact with the people. Mostly it was Fred and I most of the days.
Yeah. Okay. And you're doing a face character, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was a face character.
Yeah, yeah. Because the movie. I
was a friend of Barney.
Yeah. I don't think Universal has the code word because Universal is the world of movies, whereas Disney has the illusion of fantasy. Like Universal draws the curtain back, because. I'm a triple park person. I worked at all three, so I try to remember like my rule, like the terminology.
What's my code?
Yeah, it's different. I mean, I I'm a theater kid too, so I love the theater terminology at Disney. But it's always funny when you hear like different companies like have like, oh no, we're
staff. How do members. I phrase this?
Like, whatever. Can I put one finger, two fingers?
Right. Which way am I pointing?
It still happens, but
But the most fun at Universal was. They did a private party for everyone who worked on the first Flintstone movie. Mm-hmm. And it was up at what used to be prop. Oh, hello, Duff Beer Can. And it was up at what used to be Prop Plaza. And it was a big party there. And they had a big band shell and they had a band. And it was, everybody who worked on it. So they had all kinds of food and bars and entertainment. And so Wilma, Betty, Fred, and Barney show up to get into the party. And everyone has their invitations except for Barney Rubble. And so the maitre d' of the event wouldn't let me in. So I then, for the rest of the evening, tried to sneak into the event. If that was just me with a palm leaf, a big palm frond, like trying to sneak in, and they would pick me up by the shirt collar and throw me out. Or at one point they were bringing in a bunch of food and I was on the end and I took like a napkin and tied it around my like a top and I had a tray like one of the girls, let me in. Nope, okay,
that's like some classic Jerry Lewis stuff right there.
It was total straight from the Flintstones, hey, let me in, stuff.
That's cool. So was that a fun night by accidental circumstances, or was that something you guys were like,
we planned it?
Okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, imagine working like, man, this guy keeps trying to get in here. I'm just if you don't tell
what's wrong with that guy.
Yeah, you go to the staff, they don't know.
What's wrong with that guy in a dress?
was the Prop Plaza, is that where the tram launch point is now? right?
It was halfway through the tram tour in the past, right by where the collapsing bridge used to be or is.
Oh, maybe still it was like that far down. Okay.
Yeah. Way up there. Yeah.
I have very my memories of that area are very I've seen pictures and stuff, but I can't place where it was.
It changes all the time.
Yeah. Like in the '90s, they did the big staircase that was the four escalators, like,
right.
That trip you out every time you go down them. Cause I think before you'd take the tram and the tram, there was a stop and you would stay in that area and then board the tram and move.
Yeah. Again. So there was actually what I remember back when I was a kid, and I'm going in the way back machine here. You'd get on the tram and then it would stop down by Lucy's dressing room and they would show you right now where
Transformers
dummy, the mummy is and Jurassic and that whole area. That was a parking lot and they would drop you off and you would tour Lucy's dressing room and you would go through a soundstage and they would show you different Foley and that kind of stuff and makeup and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And then you'd get back on and then you would go. And then a little bit farther, about literally halfway through the tour, they'd stop at this area that was called Prop Plaza. Mm-hmm. And you'd get off the tram, walk around, stretch your legs. And they had all these giant props from different film and TV stuff. So you'd be standing next to a 20-foot high telephone or, they'd have a stagecoach moving back and forth with a rolling backdrop showed you were being chased by somebody or whatever. So that was an area right by the collapsing bridge. Then you get back on a tram and you'd finish out the rest of it. It would take you back up to the starting or exit point.
Because I remember when I was a kid, I do remember, I'm 38. So I remember there's a little bit of the 80s I still remember. But I remember the 18 track was there. I'm not sure if it was at the prop spot, but I remember that. I think it was at the prop area because you can lift the truck.
The A-team truck. The van you could lift. Yes.
Yeah. So I remember that. I think it was still there back then. I could be wrong, but a lot of my memories of Universal are from late 80s and 90s. So I remember the Conan show. In fact, when you told me that you did the Conan show, my eyes lit up because that was my favorite shows as a kid.
Oh my God.
I think till this day, I actually went back and I rewatched some YouTube videos of the old show, and till this day, I still think that is an amazing show. Like special effect wise,
spectacular.
Because you walk in the theater and it's like the water is just pouring down. It's very mysterious, very cool looking. Mm-hmm. You hear the water and you see the lights and
mist.
Very quiet. Yeah. It's it's a very cool environment to walk in on. Mm-hmm. And the show itself, it's swords and sorcery,
Right.
It's one of those things that was really big in the '80s with Dungeons and Dragons and all that stuff, Huge. But you played young Conan.
I was young Conan. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. I rehearsed it. Like I said, I did the big, descent down with the rope at the beginning. And then,
is it just a rope? Is it just a rope or is there a safety line or is it just a rope?
It's just a rope.
Okay, that's
like back then, back in the day, it was I mean, it was, and it had you hooked off on it.
Okay. Oh, so it did have the okay. It wasn't just like a gym rope. That's cool. How high is that? That's a high ceiling.
I'm sure they told me. I do not remember. I tried to block it out because to be honest, I bet you they probably could read off of me how terrified I was because that's really high.
Yeah. Yeah. Was there training really involved? High. Was there training involved?
There was 3 weeks of training and rehearsals. But again, all my gymnastics got me into the audition and got me, the gig. And then.
Did you feel comfortable doing rope work or is that something?
Oh yeah. That was fine. That was
okay.
That was not hard at all. It's the running all over the set afterwards and the going down in the elevator, switching with the bodybuilder
and then
running on all hands and knees to get around to the backside to switch into a ninja.
Because then you would jump in and do the stunt work for the
And then I had to be the double-sided axe.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. So you had very short period of time. You had like two people could die.
Yeah.
And then you were on and you were like, oh, my God.
That makes sense, though, because like if you hire, you could do both. I'd rather pay somebody to do both and get another actor. It makes sense
already. So yeah,
no, run over there. That's really cool. Like that if you've never seen the Conan Stunt Show, it's on YouTube. Go watch it. It's from the 80s, but it still holds up today. Like it's an incredible show. There's a giant cobra, and there's lasers, and like the swords are sparking. Like it's a cool show. I think if they brought it back, I'd be like, yes, but I don't know how.
I know,
because no one even talks about Conan anymore.
Yeah,
it's funny. Like nowadays, I think you get the nerd. Actually, because when I think, because I see the movies, I love the Conan movies, like the Destroyer and the Barbarian.
Right.
And it's funny because like when I watched, because I even when I was a kid, I knew the story of Conan, but then when I watched the show, and I was like, well, why does he turn into, like, what does that happen? Like, he's a kid. Mm-hmm. And then he turns it to so he's like Shazam? Like, what? I don't remember that in the movie.
Yeah.
So I clearly the studios took a little bit of liberty in terms of the story of Conan.
Oh yeah. Oh yes.
Was there anybody who was like, well, I don't think this is what the movie was like. Like, was anybody that had like input, like actually like continuity wise, anyone care? Or like,
well, the show had been running for so long by the time that I had jumped into it, I was being put into it, that it had already been discussed 100 times. But when you were being trained, the trainer would be like, so don't think about this part, but here's where this part happens, which never really happened ever in any of the films, so we're moving past that. And you're like, because nobody would ever go, what is my motivation this elevator?
It's such a nerd thing.
Get you out of here. And not to mention, it's 100 million degrees out, and you're going to be covered in CO2, so you're going to freeze and be really cold really quick.
Yeah. Like, do you want your AGVA credit or not? Because
for me at that time was like, is my name on the check? Then I'm good to go.
No problem. That's so cool. So so you did study some stunt work as well, or was that just kind of by work? You kind of
really, they just kind of taught me stuff there at the, for the show.
Okay.
Stunt work has never really been anything that I've gotten into or needed to get into. I'm more of a song and dance guy. There's very little buildings you have to throw yourself off of in a in 42nd Street.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I see a new version. I see an entirely new version.
It'll be a hit. A lot of my acrobatic friends, at least the male acrobatic friends, they like when they do acrobats, they do kind of fall into stunt work as well. Like they'll study easy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's a same circle of people and the same workshops, and you just kind of fall into it, you know? But it's fascinating that you said you're more of a song and dance man. So
yeah. So I went the other way.
Yeah. So you sing as well.
So I was, again, I was a song and dance guy who went, if I learn how to do this, I might get into more get more work. Yeah. Okay.
You kind of look at your attributes, right? Huh? You look at your skills and you kind of like accumulate, like, I can do this.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't want to be the uneven parallel bar guy. I don't want to be the rings guy. I just want to know how to do a couple of back tucks or whatever, get some stuff across the floor, and I'm good.
I ask a lot because it's funny. I've been interviewing a lot of entertainers, which is really, really fun. I think I want to keep doing it. But I ask a lot of them, like, so if you went to audition, what order of audition process do you prefer? Like, do you want to dance first and then sing, or do you want to sing first and then dance, or act first? I mean, rarely do you ever act first and then can't hear you sing. It's more like, can you sing or can you dance first? And then they want to see everything else. It's surprising to hear everyone's like preference to like, I'd rather, like, I think Jason's worked for you guys. Jason Evans. You know Jason Evans? Yeah. I had him on a few days ago, and he was like, I've seen him perform. He's a great entertainer, period.
Yeah.
But he's very, he's like, I, I prefer to, like, you know, do dance first and, you know, maybe singing later. It's like, oh, that's like, because I've seen him. He's a very talented guy. So it's kind of funny how people, like, view their strengths compared to, like, another skill that they're not too, you know, and everybody has, like, one that they were much stronger in, and which kind of calms me, because I feel like, oh, I should have been, like, a triple threat. I should be more well-rounded, you know, but everybody, even the most well-rounded entertainer, has, like, one strength that they kind of prefer to showcase, so that makes everything else easy, you know. For you, what would you say was yours?
Well I like to sing first and then dance. And the reason why is because when I'm dancing, I get all sweaty and, you know, it's like not
you glow.
I'm a hot sweaty mess. It's like I am dripping from head to toe, and the last thing I want to do is, like, to be sing, like, okay, go wipe down and come up here and sing a ballad. You're like, is that triple sweat is coming down?
Oh my God, he's crying his scene.
He's really into that sweat. Song.
That's awesome.
Yes, I was tearing up. But yeah, no, it's like, let me sing, get that over with, and then let's dance, and then let me go home because I'm going to want to shower.
Are there any notable shows and roles you've done within your touring career?
Mostly a lot of here in the area here. I did do Radio City for a little while.
That's a fun one.
So I have Broadway credit. But mostly just local stuff. Couple of little tours and stuff, but yeah, mostly just local stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So
a lot of stuff at the Curtain Call Dinner Theater, a lot of stuff at Civic Light Operas, at the Laguna Playhouse, you know, a lot of stuff around the area.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I when I talk to Jason, I kind of forget how, like, theater, because I've done both. I did the LA thing and I did the new thing, but theater is primarily mostly in Orange County.
Yeah.
You do Black Box Theater in LA, and there's some spots and some venues like Pasadena Playhouse. It's there, you know, but I think, like, a litter of it, like, more of it, it's definitely Orange County. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. And it's a small community of performers down here. So you all get to know each other and you all get to work with each other in this show and that show. And then you don't see each other for a couple of years and then you get into another show together. And
a lot of familiar names, a lot of familiar faces. And even if I haven't met somebody, I know of them. I know, like, you hear things, you see them in productions and, like, you know of them, but you don't know them personally until you do a show or do friends and whatnot, which is kind of cool. Cause, like, doing the podcast has been really fun because I've been able to reconnect with those entertainers and those friends and hear their stories and their journey and sharing my experiences and, like, oh, I never knew that. And so it's cool to hear, cause for me, when I was doing my acting thing, like, it was a time when, like, the people aren't as woke as they are now, you know, like, now it's like, we want to have diversity. Back then it was like, I wouldn't take roles because I knew they're not going to cast me because they're not an Asian kid in this role. Like, I just knew, and then the Asian jobs I was offered, like, I don't know if I want to do it because they're a little, like, offensive. I think the last Asian role I auditioned for was for Thoroughly Modern Millie. Mm. And then when I found out, like, what the role consists of, I was like, I'm not gonna do it. It was like even the modern update of that show still has a lot of issues, and like I just wasn't. It was like an eye opener. Like, okay, I'm not gonna do this, and they wanted me to. They're like, you're the only Asian guy. Like, and you're like, no, I'm not gonna do. Yeah, because that show, you're purposely made to talk and sing fake Chinese.
Yeah,
they put subtitles above, and it's supposed to be really funny. And then, like, it's also like human smuggling, which is like, oh, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't see how thoroughly, and it's funny, it's Thoroughly Modern Millie, but I don't know how you can have that show in a modern context now. Like, I don't think 2021 would ever, like, we'll see that show unless you, like, completely revamp the show. But because it was a time times when, like,
changed.
The revival came, and then it got popular again. So then other theaters were doing it, and, like, it's so funny when, like, I get calls for, I mean, not anymore, because I haven't acted, like, since I started DJing, but I always get calls for, like, oh, there's a King and I or a Flower Drum Song. Like, oh, great. I'll get cast in these shows. I know I will, you know, but for the most part, other shows I've done, I prefer, like you, I prefer to sing first and then do. I mean, if I have to dance, like, okay, I'm not like a great dancer, but right. I did West Side Story and like West Side Story, and I've done West Side Story before, but like this particular theater, they're very like, I don't know if it was the community of actors there, but like they like threw you in the wolves and I was like, ooh. I wasn't really, I'm not like, I move well. Like I can learn, you know, I took dance lessons after that experience because like they kind of left me to fend for myself. And then like, it felt like I was treading water and no one was helping me. And, but Jason was the only, and that's why I had him on the show. And I thanked him personally because like, he was the only person who was like my friend during that process. And he was there. And I think this is a lot about the community too. Cause like, I feel like, I know there's a bit of competitive nature to the business. At the same time, it's like that experience, Jason, kind of like, if I see someone who's struggling, I'm going to help, or like, I want to be there to, you know, to be that person, to be that, I guess, gateway into this, into this world. Cause look, if you're going to tell me that everybody who is theater is talented, you're lying, because there are a lot of people that want to learn and just love it, you know? And like, you shouldn't like shame a person or not involve yourself with the person because like, oh, they can't do pirouettes. Like, no, like help them, you know, like, but that experience inspired me to learn dance, and I am much better now. Like, I learned the pirouette and I learned how to turn my head, you know, like they're not skills I would look. I had no one telling me like, you need to do these to do theater. I just fell in love with it. And then I just went for it. And then through the process of learning from my mistakes and learning, things that I was, okay, I need this, I need this. And like, it was a different experience for me. And sharing that story with other people, it's like, and they understand more and like, oh, now I see that. Like, now I understand why he had so much anxiety, you know? And like Jason, I bring Jason up a lot. He's an awesome guy. Book Jason. Jason's an awesome guy. If you see him, book him for a job. He's a great guy. But like when I told him the experiences, like, you know, I didn't think about that. And like, I didn't know you were going through that experience. But you told me like, you know, and it's great that in hindsight that I can go back to these friends and tell them like, thank you for being a good person, being a good friend to me, you know? And for you in theater, was there ever like a mentor or somebody who just kept pushing you or like that had your back in terms of your career?
Oh God. There was a woman when I first started. I'm the typical from Chorus Line. My sister had to go to dance class because she was klutzy and she would fall down a lot. And so because she had to go, I had to sit in the back of class and just sit and wait till class was over with my mom. And so I would get up and jump around and make fun of them. And after a year of class, the instructor was like, thank you for bringing Kimberly. But can you keep bringing Tim back? We'd like to sponsor him. So I got three, four, five years, something like that of ballet classes for free because they wanted a guy in the class who could partner the girls. So, and I was, God, 8.
Oh, you're young.
8-ish, little.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just, you know, give them your arm and walk in a circle so they could hold on and do a, you know, a back attitude, you know, or in releve or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it was just partnering work to get them used to that sort of stuff. So I did that for like 3, 4, 5 years where I would, and it was literally up a very steep stairway in this building. It was Bob's Dance Studio down in Gardena a long time ago. And it was all brick room with hardwood floors. And Bob was the ballet instructor, and his wife would play pianos for the music for the class.
Yeah.
And it was just old school, home school, you know, that kind of stuff. And that kind of really got me going, oh. And then when I went in to start doing shows, I worked a lot with a woman named Dorothy Laspina, from the Redondo Torrance Gardena area. And she had directed and, or she had choreographed a bunch of shows for Vegas and was a Vegas show girl and that sort of stuff. And that's who I then got my passion from. She was old school. She was walk up and hit you with the stick, burn that out. What is wrong? You know,
she was
tough. She was loving. And she would always, you know, come up and pat you on the cheek and then smack you and be like, don't do that again. But I love you. See you tomorrow in class. That love kind tap. Of person.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. That so, sounds, yeah.
That's so funny.
Those are my two.
It's so cool to hear, because like, and here's the thing: people like that, it could be subtle, you know. They probably didn't even notice the impact they had, you know. So it's always great to hear them get that credit and also hear that there was a voice or a moment in your life where someone inspired you. I think there needs to be more of that, because I grew up in an environment where doing what I loved was like, well. Yeah, there's always dental school. Yeah, like there was never there was a very begrudging a sense of watching perform, but they love watching perform and stuff. But it was like, well, how long is he gonna do this? How can he have a career? How can he right. You know, how can you make a living as an entertainer? And I know for a lot of parents that's a big fear, but the kids are fine, guys. like as long as you basically support their passions, you know, unless that passion is, you know, doing something bad, but like, if they have a true passion for something that they want to pursue, like encourage them and be a beacon of support rather than, because I just always had that doubt. Like I had a societal doubt, I've been told like, well, we're not looking for an Asian, or like, we can't cast you because you're Asian. I've heard that. I've gotten it a lot of times. So there's societal rejection, and there's also like parental rejection. So like, I hear stories from people that have, you know, just this great support of a family that want them to, you know, keep pursuing their passions. And like, I had, my acting teacher, Kelly Ford, was a big, influence on me. She's kind of the one that always, like, she saw my talent and like, she always challenged it too. Like she'd, you know, give me some really challenging scenes and she was the person I talked about auditions when I went to auditions and whatnot. And like, she was the one that was I want to get her on my podcast, but I don't know what she's going on. She hasn't got back to me. And also my choir teacher, Mr. Rodriguez or Aaron, because we're all adults now. He gave me like my first solo, and that was like the kind of, that first trigger where like I kind of like my talent felt validated. Like it wasn't just like I'm sitting in the shower, I can sing. Like it was validation, you know, that I earned it. And I think that's why I like the audition process, is like when you earn a role, when you earn a spot, because you put your talent out in the forefront and you got the results, you know.
A lot of people are always afraid of the auditions, and I'm like,
I love them. Yeah.
No, I enjoy every aspect of it. I enjoy the rehearsal process. I enjoy the creative and putting it together time. I enjoy the, like you said, earning your spot in the show and putting it together. And then the performances are just the icing on the cake to me.
I never felt the fear of like auditioning for my talent. My fear was always like, well, where are they going to put me in this show? You know, because like we're like, I know this is like 42nd Street, and like I'm not a great dancer. You know, like I know there are things that there are things that I'm not good at that I need work. And like, will they take a chance on, you know, just one talent or just because they like me? You know, and different reasons and casting, and I know casting is a very complicated thing. I know everybody wants a role and everybody can't get a role, and overall it's the director's vision and how they want to do the show. I get it, you know. At the same time, you know, like I do think that there's a huge margin of entertainers that don't get the attention that you know they think or I think they deserve because whatever reason for their the way they look or the way they maybe the whatever they classify as whatever, because casting itself is very, and I understand, because casting itself, it's a very like visceral and very like shell of a thing, you know, like I need to cast this particular role, you know, and like they know what they want. So it's one of the things where like you can't take it personal. But
Ooh.
things are getting better. Like we live in a society that like we can have a Black Elsa now.
Yes.
We can have,
perfect example.
Has nothing to do with the storytelling. It's just a part of like, you know, and that's why I think now is a great time for the younger generation to push those boundaries and really go for like, yes, let's get those transgender roles out there. You know, like those, yes, are, it's a great time right now because like, it's relevant. Like the world I live in is a beautiful palette of diversity. And I think there's no way of push against that when that's the reality we live in, you know?
And if you're only seeing one color, then you're colorblind.
Yeah. There's a reason we went from black and white to color television.
Yeah. You know,
to
see more. Hello, color. Wizard of Oz. yeah.
But Tim, I feel like we just scratched the surface of your career and life, and I want to do more. But I think we're going to cap it here,
okay.
And I definitely want to have you on to tell more stories. I would love to hear. Yeah, yeah. So we'll definitely plan for another podcast. But I want to thank you so much for having me on. Thank you much for being on my show.
Thank you for having me on.
I was like, thanks for having me on. No, this is my show. Thanks for being on my show.
Thank you so much for catching this episode of Unplugged. Now, there's more Unplugged available for you, not only on YouTube, but also in podcast form on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, or anywhere podcasts are found. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. We got more coming up. Thank you so much for watching. And don't forget to be safe, be kind, and be you. And I'll see you in the next podcast. Peace.